We're broadcasting today from the Center for the Study of Paradise, and our topic is Trouble in Paradise. For that, we turn to Josh Kuhn. He organized a wonderful exhibit. It's up now at the Grammy Museum. It's called Trouble in Paradise. It's about musical subcultures in L.A. 1945 to 1980. Josh Kuhn also teaches at USC's Annenberg School and does many other excellent things. Josh, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it seems like 25 or 30 years ago in L.A., maybe it wasn't exactly a paradise, but it certainly seems like a golden age from our perspective. Everybody had a job, the economy was booming, the university was the best in the country, the public university, and of course, music from L.A. changed the world.
Everybody was surfing.
And yet, your point is...
Well, I hate to be such a downer. I mean, I'm not trying to introduce trouble where it didn't exist, but trying to just offer a somewhat truthful representation of just how complicated notions of reality are in Los Angeles, as they've always been. It's a topic that's been well discussed about the kind of battle between the myths of Los Angeles and Southern California and the realities of social, economic, and cultural life here. So with this exhibit, I wanted to try to deal with some of those themes, perhaps through an unlikely source of pop music.
Well, in this segment, we're going to listen to some of the music of LA's subcultures from 1945 to, I don't know, 1970 or so. We'll also be giving away a little later in this segment the complete Midnighters box set.
Ooh, it's choice. The choice box.
But I want to. One of the great things about your show at the Grammy Museum is I'm a historian. Maybe that's why I liked it so much. The way you organize this around a chronology, starting where Pacific Standard Time requires that we all start. 1945, the war ends, the LA economy is booming for pretty much everybody, and down on Central Avenue in South LA, Johnny Otis and his orchestra play Harlem Nocturne. Before we listen to that, tell us about Central Avenue, Johnny Otis, 1945.
Well, it's a key part of the post-World War II LA, not just music story, but kind of entertainment and cultural industry story, that Central Avenue during and after the war was thriving as the kind of entertainment mecca for working class and middle class black LA. And the soundtrack to that life, of course, was blues and jazz. And here comes a guy like Johnny Otis, who was himself actually not black, but identified as such, led some of the most incredible bands on Central Avenue, ended up opening his own club, the Barrel House in Watts. And one night on the stage of Club Alabama, he and his band are messing around, and they launch into this song, which becomes one of the first kind of national hits that among others, puts the LA R&B scene on the map.
Johnny Otis died in January. Of course, we love Johnny Otis here at KPF Care. He had a show here for a decade. I always thought Johnny Otis was black, but what exactly was he?
Was white Greek, always wrote about and always said that if he was going to have to make a choice about who he was going to be down with, he was not going to say he was white. And one of the great kind of testaments of that, in fact, we have in the exhibit, which is his memoir of the Watts riots, Listen to the Lambs. We have a copy of that book, as part of the show. And it's really a manifesto for a kind of model of racial justice in Los Angeles that he wrote not long after the riots.
Well, let's listen. 1945 on Central Avenue, World War II is over, and Johnny Otis and his orchestra record Harlem Nocturne.
Thank you.
Johnny Otis and his orchestra, Harlem Nocturne from 1945, the start of Josh Coon's show Trouble in Paradise at the Grammy Museum. Next year, 1946, you have a great entry. Kerry McWilliams publishes Southern California Country about social conflict in L.A. Still one of my favorite books. 1949 on your timeline, Jerry Lieber meets Mike Stoller. Let's pause and contemplate that for a minute.
Well, first, I just want to say it was, you know, there's small triumphs when one is doing an exhibit, and being able to get Kerry McWilliams into a pop music show is,
yes,
feel like I'm good at that
I'm
point.
With you.
You know,
I'm
that's
with you.
For those who follow McWilliams, that's the kind of like, oh, you know, an academic nerd curated this exhibit. So I was really excited about that. Lieber and Stoller, of course, you know, part of part of the larger story about race and ethnicity that I wanted the show to tell in some ways. You know, two American Jews who fall in love with R&B and become two of the principal songwriters of black music in Los Angeles, and who really shaped so much of that sound, and who were also, you know, I think like that instrumental that we just heard, one of the things I wanted to do with the show is get people to think about how music can be political even if it doesn't seem political. That just because it's lyrically not outlining protest, that the music itself, the communities that it creates, the dreams that it allows you to have can become a kind of politics.
Music can be political even when it doesn't seem political. We're speaking with Josh Coon about his show at the Grammy Museum, Trouble in Paradise. 1950, William Parker is sworn in as chief of the LAPD. Why is that on your timeline?
It's so funny. You know, now the more I've been kind of talking about the show and talking to my students about it, I keep thinking I should have just called the show, you know, William H. Parker's
Los Angeles.
Los Angeles. Because the role of the LAPD, I mean, one of the themes of the show is the kind of difference between the idea of Los Angeles as a kind of Eden, as a promised land of equality and freedom, and the realities of it in the post-World War II years as a city of intense segregation. And that segregation was, of course, kind of naturalized every year by the LAPD. Parker was no friend of integration and proud of it, and openly so, that we still have a center named after him, and he got a TV show out of it with Dragnet. And I think the relationship between music and the cops, between policing and music, is not just limited to LA in that period, but one could do a whole history of popular music around the world as, in fact, music as a response to cops. And so Parker and the LAPD, in terms of their relationship to Central Avenue, eventually having a large role in shutting down Central Avenue, the role of the LAPD in East Los Angeles, role of the LAPD in the Sunset Strip riots, it's a recurring presence in these years.
Fast forward to 1958, the unforgettable Ritchie Valens song La Bamba. What is the world that La Bamba comes out of?
So I think La Bamba gets perhaps has become really simplified over the years and takes on really kind of quick, jokey ideas these days as a kind of bar mitzvah tune or a wedding tune even. But La Bamba was really, many claim it as, you know, the first Mexican-American rock and roll song, arguably the first Mexican-American punk song in some ways. And for me, it's a song also about the suburbs. It's a San Fernando Valley song. Ritchie Valens' parents both worked munitions plant in Long Beach originally, were part of wartime industry, and you know, it's a traditional Mexican folk song that he tricks out with R&B rhythms because he was a total student of Little Richard. That's why he took on Ritchie Valens as his name, Little Richard of the Valley, in fact, and you know, plays this song as a Mexican American singing in Spanish, but his band is mostly African American. So to me, it really embodies those issues of geography, but also cross-cultural mixing that was taking place in this period.
Let's listen. 1958, the San Fernando Valley, Ritchie Valens. Of course, Ritchie Valens' La Bamba. Josh Coon, curated the show Trouble in Paradise. It's at the Grammy Museum through June 3rd, 1958. The other thing that happened of interest in this regard is the Ashgrove opens its doors, and yes, you are holding a night to celebrate the Ashgrove at the Grammy Museum downtown on April 5th. What's going to happen 7:30 on April 5th at the Grammy Museum's Night of the Ashgrove?
We're going to, I mean, the Ashgrove officially closed its doors in the early 70s, or had its doors closed in the early 70s by arson fire. And
we blamed it on the Gusanos.
It's still being blamed. and what we're, you know, it's still, the Ashgrove still exists conceptually. And we are going to be celebrating the legacy of the Ashgrove with Ed Pearl, who was the creator of the Ashgrove, some performers who performed in the heyday of the Ashgrove, but also, you know, the goal is to talk about how the Ashgrove can be a model for progressive musical venues and community going forward.
April 5th, 7:30 at the Grammy Museum. It's on Olympic and Figueroa. So now we want to fast forward to 1965 and our giveaway for this hour, the Midnighters. Tell us about the Midnighters.
Midnighters are, I mean, one of the things that we wanted to do in this show that was really, really important to me was to highlight the role of Mexican-American artists in this scene. So often when music in LA is talked about, scenes are talked about separately, that it's, you know, black music in LA, Mexican music in LA, you know, surf music, et cetera. And the goal with this exhibit was to say, well, this is all happening at the same time. So what was happening in East Los Angeles was this vital, booming rock and roll and R&B scene. And the Midnighters were among a handful of bands who really kind of held that scene down and at the foundation and became one of the most famous bands to come out of East L.A. And it happened mostly because of, again, an instrumental, a song about a street, and not just any street, but Whittier Boulevard.
So now it's time for today's contest and giveaway. Before we listen to the Midnighters, we're going to give away the Midnighters box set. This is a fantastic 4-CD collection of every song the Midnighters recorded, starting with Whittier Boulevard, songs of love, rhythm, and psychedelia. Here's the contest question. Willie Garcia was the lead singer of the Midnighters. What was he called on the L.A. music scene? Willie Garcia, what was his performing name? We'll take caller number 7 at 818-985-5735. If you can identify Willie Garcia to Maggie LaPique standing by on our phones, 818-985-5735. We'll give you the complete Midnighters. So let's listen.
Ooh.
Whittier Avenue. Whittier Boulevard, the Midnighters. I think our phone lines are all full, so no more calls. We will have given away the complete Midnighters box set. Josh Kuhn is the curator of the Trouble in Paradise show at the Grammy Museum. Josh, what is the correct answer to Willie Garcia's nickname on the L.A. music scene?
Little Willie G.
Little Willie G. Congratulations, we're lucky winner. We have a winner. Isabel. Isabel could identify Little Willie G. Congratulations, Isabel. We'll send that box set out to you today. We're closing the phone lines now. So moving right along, 1965, the Watts Riots, 1966, slightly smaller scale, the riot on Sunset Strip. You have, as a historian, I was amazed to see that you have a leaflet headline, Police Lawlessness Must Stop. It's about the riot on Sunset Strip, and it says there's a demonstration that will start outside Pandora's Box. Where did you, this is like the most ephemeral item, a leaflet from 1966. Where did you get this? What is it about?
We really benefited from the generosity of a lot of collectors in Los Angeles who, you know, unlike a lot of other museum shows, where you're dealing with collectors with formal collections who collect in order to loan, I was trying to find folks who collect for their personal collections and convince them to turn it over and let us borrow it for a few months. Bob Krasnow is the one who was very nice enough to let us loan a couple of his flyers. He also let us loan the Pandora's Box menu, which we have. We weren't
what,
able
what
to
What was
use,
Pandora's Box?
It was the nightclub on the Sunset Strip, a rock club, in front of which many of the protests started about curfews and so-called loitering laws that the LAPD was trying to enforce against young people on the Strip. We also had actually, Bob, he also has, we weren't able to include it in the show because it didn't fit in the case, a chunk of cement from the club.
It's heartbreaking that that wasn't in,
I know.
In there.
It's heavy, too.
I bet. Well, our musical selection from 1966 is Buffalo Springfield, For What It's Worth. Actually, I never knew the title of this song. I always called it There's Something Happening Here. Mm-hmm. Who was Buffalo Springfield, and what is this song?
One of the very influential kind of Sunset Strip affiliated and eventually Laurel Canyon affiliated bands, members of which went on to, of course, be part of CSN, Crosby, Stills and Nash and Young, and many other bands. And this was a song that Stephen Stills wrote about, inspired by the Sunset Strip riots. It became a kind of generalized protest anthem in the 1960s, but started really as a response to this one particular event on the Strip.
1966, Sunset Strip, Buffalo Springfield, For What It's Worth.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Buffalo Springfield, For What It's Worth, from 1966. The next year, kind of a change of direction in the show. We move on to the Beach Boys, Heroes and Villains, a very different subculture, a very different sound.
Yeah, and Heroes and Villains, of course, is, I guess you would call kind of, in a way, later Beach Boys, or not at least stereotypical Beach Boys. This, I believe the version we're going to hear is actually from the still brand new box set, not reissue, but issue. Of the Smile Sessions. And Heroes and Villains was, as legend has it, written in one night in Brian Wilson's sandbox in his living room with Van Dyke Parks, because, of course, Brian Wilson was actually afraid of the water, and so the beach had to come inside. And for me, that's also a very interesting part of the Beach Boys story, is the way that their sound early on was used to kind of promote this mythic surfing paradise image of Los Angeles. And within that myth was the kind of reality of unrest, even within the band itself. And on their later music, like on the Smile Sessions and like in this song, you can really hear just how complicated their vision of L.A. and L.A. as part of America was.
Now, my understanding, correct me if I'm right about this, is that the original tracks, the original conception comes from 1967, never released at that time.
Correct.
And what we have now is assembled.
Right. Multiple versions have been released in different forms over the years, but most are saying now that this current one is the standard.
So this is a reminder of what the Beach Boys were thinking about, let us say, and trying out in 1967, Heroes and Villains.
I've been in the town, so wandered back in the city. I've been taken for a lost to come, and I've known for a long, long time. Fell in love years ago with an innocent girl from the Spanish and Indian home, home of the heroes and villains. Once at night, you couldn't swear goodbye, and she was bright in the rain of the bullets that eventually brought her down. She's still dancing in the night, unafraid of what is
Beach Boys, Heroes and Villains. We only got a couple minutes left here with Josh Kuhn. So we've talked about Central Avenue, Whittier Boulevard, Sunset Strip, the beach, and most important in your presentation of all this, the places where these streets cross. That's the real contribution of the Trouble in Paradise show. I just want to ask you in our closing minutes here, how you managed to put this show together. When I first thought about what could a show be about the music of L.A. in the 50s and 60s and 70s, I thought, well, you've got the records. You can put those on display. You've got the album covers. You've got some performance stills. Yet I found it a completely gripping and fascinating exhibit. How did you do that?
Oh, thank you. I mean, the Grammy Museum, I was very lucky to work with an institution that is so both kind of follows traditional models of display in terms of physical objects, but also lots of multimedia opportunities. So we mix artifacts, physical objects, 3D objects like original guitars from Ritchie Valens and, you know, Lil Willie G and the like, but also a digital jukebox, that we gutted a 70s jukebox. It's got about 80 tunes on it. We've got 7 video screens. We've got an interactive Microsoft table that gives you the history of the Ash Grove on it. So it's a mix of old and new media. And for me, that's just a crucial way of engaging audiences of all stripes.
Josh Kuhn, he organized the wonderful exhibit Trouble in Paradise, about the musical subcultures of L.A. 1945 to 1980. It runs at the Grammy Museum, downtown L.A. on Olympic and Figueroa through June 3rd. And coming up on April 5th at the Grammy Museum, A Night at the Ash Grove. Josh Kuhn, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, John.